If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the podcast that's not too interesting, it's not boring, it's just interesting enough. And with me today are Robin.
Hello, Martin. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks, mate. I'm all right. You had a good Easter?
Yeah, lovely Easter. Yeah.
That was the last thing that happened, wasn't it? It's kind of all merged into
it
one.
It is. Kind of forgot that bank days. Holidays are a thing.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. Alex, how's it going?
Hi, guys. How's it going? You guys both all right?
Yes.
Did you eat lots of chocolate over Easter?
Actually, yes.
Yes, too.
Yeah.
Yes, as well.
Did you manage to find some eggs in this post-apocalyptic dystopian world we're living in now?
I managed to get eggs delivered from my mother and father-in-law, which is very nice.
Oh, that's
they
nice. Did,
they left them outside. It's be gone, shoo them away. And and then, of course, debt owed everything. Yeah, that's the world we live in.
Are we talking about chocolate eggs? Or real eggs.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I feel like chocolate eggs have been a lot easier to get hold of than real eggs in this.
In
fairness,
so.
Yeah.
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 I would have traded my Galaxy chocolate egg for a 12 pack any day.
Would you
12 pack of eggs?
Would you have traded it for? Would you have traded it for 12 boiled eggs or 12 poached eggs or both?
No, you've chosen my least favourite form of eggs there.
What would you have gone for?
Just eggs in the shell, so I can choose how to prepare them.
No, they either become pre-boiled or pre-poached. I'm not even sure how you pre-poach an egg. But you've got
I don't know what I'd even do. I guess scrambled so that they're all there
scrambled,
and I can...
Yeah.
Or just loose.
I'm not just going to go to town on 12 fried eggs like a madman. So
you've got to store those fried eggs, yeah. Anyway, with that said and done, what have you guys learned
this
week?
That's a hot take on Easter.
What have you guys learned this week?
Oh, after you, Alex.
I mean, other than we can really push the boundaries of conversation, I learned, this really actually pushes the boundaries of what it can be considered interesting, but I found this interesting. So beer cans used to be 40% thicker and much stronger than they are now.
Mm.
You know, like everyday aluminium cans.
Yeah.
And that's why there's that kind of movie, TV trope of people crushing beer cans. Because it was actually a kind of like show of strength.
It was a difficult thing.
Yeah. So the notable example that this article points out is Jaws. Remember Quint from Jaws?
Yeah.
There's that bit where he's...
Doesn't he like flatten them?
Downs a beer can and then crushes the can, and then I can't remember the character's name.
Yeah.
But the other guy drinks from a styrofoam cup and then crushes it as well. It's a very funny moment.
That's it.
But yeah,
I haven't seen that for ages.
I mean, occasionally you come across a can, not like a mainstream like soda can or whatever. You come across a can, a beer can or whatever that is still an old school thick can. Rarely.
Mm.
And it's quite satisfying to drink out of. You're like, how many millilitres are in this one? Oh, it's still 330, but the can feels heavier.
I don't know if I've had that experience, but I'm waiting for the day.
I mean, you're
Martin
missing out.
Talking about, like, there's a lot of craft beers, aren't there, Martin, that do that?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. And also, if you go into the foreign section of a supermarket and you get, like, a... imported.
You mean international cuisine, Martin?
Yeah, international cuisine, foreign. Then often the cans are heavier. It's true.
Fair enough, yeah. Anyway, that was what I learned this week.
It's been
a slow week for me.
That's actually very interesting, I thought, yeah. Because there's, especially in 80s movies, I feel like there's a lot of moments where people crush a beer can in their hands. And there's a moment in one of my favourite films, Tom Hanks, called The Burbs, a film from 1988. You ever seen it?
Yeah.
Haven't seen it.
Years and years ago, yeah. I think I saw it.
It's a black comedy, but there's a bit where he's really frustrated. He just picks up some beer cans and crushes them. And it always used to make me laugh, but now it probably has a bit more dramatic meaning than I realised it did.
Yes.
That's the thing. Whenever you see someone do that in real life or in a movie or something, you just think, that's a bit lame. Why have they done that? That doesn't make them look strong. That makes them look weak and pathetic.
Yeah.
But actually, yeah, back then, I guess it was a bit more impressive, at least.
A little bit. I learned something very different, but any dog owner probably realizes and remembers and knows that dogs' noses are quite cold, aren't they?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Alex, you've got a nice couple of dogs, haven't you?
Yeah.
I'll throw that out there.
Couple of Frenchies.
There you go. And apparently, scientists in Sweden and Hungary have done a study. And they think they now know why dogs' noses feel cold.
Okay.
And it's as simple as dogs' noses are, on average, I think, 5 degrees Celsius cooler than their environment. And part of the reason is their natural heat sensors.
Okay.
That is interesting.
So they think that, you know, dogs descended from wolves. Wolves hunt. And they have their noses are colder than the environment because they can trace heat signatures very vaguely in their environment and find prey.
That's really interesting.
So is that related to smell at all, or is that just kind of a different sense almost that they have?
Literally a different sense. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, they said they could
very, very cool.
Yeah, from up to 1.5 meters away, the dogs that they tested could detect faint heat sources.
Okay, so it's quite a low scale compared to their sense of smell.
It's not like Predator.
Yeah,
you know, in the movies.
But still impressive.
But,
probably quite good at say finding bodies in rubble if it was particularly cold and I don't know, for whatever reason they weren't able to use the sense of smell. Interesting.
Yeah,
that is interesting. So you never really consider that, but yeah, if you had something, if it was just literally colder, then it can tell when something's particularly warm. It would make it stand out a lot more.
Yeah, because like with climate change, everything scientists are always saying 1 degree difference makes a huge difference, has a huge impact on the climate and the way weather systems work. And I suppose if you're able to detect something that's just 1 degree warmer in the nearby vicinity, you can probably that's significant, you know.
Yeah, that is.
Fair enough. Well done to those scientists in Sweden for finally cracking the case.
Well, it's a preliminary study. Hopefully they'll get funding for a bit more research. I mean, there's so many different breeds of dogs. I mean, they've got to do a comprehensive study.
That's true.
The mystery endures.
Yes.
For the time being.
So really, I've learned nothing indeed. This week. Oh.
Well, this week I learned about Beethoven and how he overcame his deafness. It was quite well known, wasn't it, that Beethoven went deaf, and a lot of people wonder, how did he continue to play piano? Did he continue to play piano when he was deaf?
Actually,
he was able to hear due to a phenomenon called bone conduction. So what Beethoven did was he attached a metal rod to his piano and then bit down on this metal rod. So he was able to hear via the vibrations through the rod attached to the piano. So that's how he was able to
hear the music? Or was it just like he could tell the difference between the different vibrations?
I believe it was via the vibrations, but you know, like when you have your hands over your ears and you're making noises, and your voice sounds so much different to if you were speaking out loud.
Yeah.
I think it's a similar thing to that. It's like you can hear that kind of low frequency vibrations in your head as opposed to the actual sounds that are going on. And actually, it's something that has been utilized up until this day to help those who are most severely deaf, because hearing aids on people that are completely deaf, who have really significant damage, just don't work. So there are other things they can do using this bone conduction and have these particular implants in order to hear via bone conduction as opposed to traditional hearing aids.
That's quite recent, isn't it? Because I saw several people with implants behind their ears, and the implants are in their skull.
Yes.
Yeah. And I saw a few for last year for the first time, and I thought it was fascinating seeing them with these implants.
Wow. I've never heard of that before. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that has been used very in a lo-fi way for a number of years, but but not like this. So it's it's certainly an interesting field. And
yeah. Because didn't Beethoven, by the time he wrote, was it the Ninth Symphony, Ode to Joy, he was totally deaf, wasn't he?
Completely deaf, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I'm assuming he was a genius and he knew what he was writing, but part of me, until you said this, Martin, part of me always wondered, like, does Ode to Joy sound completely different to what he thought it was?
Like the whole thing of is my color yellow the same as your color yellow?
Yeah,
you would call it yellow, but it could be completely different. Yeah. I mean, that opens up a whole new can of worms, doesn't it?
Whoa.
But yeah.
Would there be any way of ever proving that? I guess not.
Fact that you can say that a color's bright, I guess, or a color's dark or has a particular tone to it. Other than that, not really. Like, if, for instance, your dark blue was my yellow, then I'd be like, no, it's not bright in that sense. It's not like sunshine, because sunshine would still be bright regardless, right?
Yes, you would.
But then what if the brightness and darkness were also inverted? What if it was like, you know, when you invert a photo, what if that's how someone sees? How would they ever know?
Well, I guess technically you wouldn't be able to know, but we can infer, can't we?
Yeah.
We can infer. Yeah. That's the closest we come, I think.
Yeah, find a common frame of reference, like the sun. Or custard.
Yeah.
You jumped to custard. Custard after the sun.
Custard, yeah.
Like the sun, custard, or Crayola. Yeah. So before we move on, guys, just a quick thank you to everyone that's been supporting us on our Patreon this week.
Oh, yes.
And also a quick mention of the Discord that we set up. And we had a really good conversation, didn't we, last week. We're planning to do more with some of our patrons. It was actually really, really good. And I don't know about you guys, but I was oddly starstruck speaking to our patrons in a strange way, like people actually who listen to us, because of course we see the figures and we see comments, but actually speaking to these guys was quite a unique experience. I don't know what you guys thought about it.
No, absolutely.
It was really nice. Yeah, thank you to everyone who jumped on the call with us. It was nice. It was nice, like people asking questions about a project that we made last year or you know a couple of years ago. It's kind of surreal that someone has been paying attention to us for that long. Thank you.
Yeah,
we'll definitely want to do it again.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was wonderful. Yeah. It made my week. And same as you, Martin. In a weird way, we were definitely starstruck by chatting to you, our Patreon supporters. So that was wonderful. And look forward to doing it again sometime soon.
Yeah. Yeah, and that one's available to all patrons of all tiers. It's an open forum for everyone. So so if anyone wants to jump on board with that, then you can.
Yeah, join our Discord.
Sweet. So what news stories have you guys found this week? What interesting, weird news have we come across?
I've got a pretty cool story that I saw this morning. Scientists have apparently created a mutant enzyme that recycles plastic bottles.
Wow.
Which seemed really cool to me, because obviously that's the problem, that plastic bottles can only be recycled to a certain degree. I think most plastic ends up in clothes or other kind of other products. They can't be recycled back into plastic bottles. And obviously plastic waste is a huge problem, an increasingly growing problem in the world today. This is a big breakthrough, apparently, by a company called Carbios that said that it was aiming for industrial scale recycling within 5 years.
Oh, wow. That's soon, isn't it?
Amazing. And they've partnered with some big companies, Pepsi and L'Oreal, to create this enzyme, which apparently experts are dubbing a major advance in the field of, well, recycling plastic.
Is the intention to keep the enzyme in a factory-controlled environment, or do they want to like release it into the oceans to break down plastic that's been polluting the waters?
I don't think it actually says, but I'm assuming it's not going to release it into the oceans.
Yeah.
obviously ocean waste, ocean, like plastics in our oceans is a massive problem. But there's some interesting projects that are trying to tackle that as well. Like the that teenager, well, I don't know how old he is now, but he was a teenager when he made that company, that are trying, that's got like a big filter in the ocean that's trying to gather up all the plastic.
The issue is the tiny particles of microplastics, isn't it?
I know that
well, of course they're breaking down into smaller and smaller little bits, so I imagine that this is for it still breaks down plastic, but it breaks down plastic that wasn't able to be recycled before, right? Or not in a particularly environmentally friendly way. So it's still for the purpose of recycling as opposed to just like getting rid of plastic waste, right?
Yeah, so this is the goal of this is to recycle the plastic. So
it's still breaking it down into tiny microplastics, but it's breaking it's able to do that where previous methods haven't been able to.
Exactly, yeah. So recycling plastic at the moment, the plastic can't be used in the same way again. So existing recycling technologies usually produce plastic only good enough for clothing and carpets. So, yeah, which I didn't realize before. I don't know why.
Clothes I just kind of made out of plastic, let alone that plastic.
I mean, I'm guessing it's like microplastics and stuff that are used.
Maybe with the process of creating those things as opposed to just making them up, right?
Yeah.
So
I watched a documentary actually on recycling, The Fun Life I Lead, a few months back. And it was crazy how few types of plastic can actually be recycled.
Oh, really?
But because everyone chucks them into the same recycling bin, someone has to manually remove all of those from like a conveyor belt. And that takes up a lot more manpower and resources than you'd think. And so when people are chucking them all into the same recycling bin without checking, it's actually causing a lot more damage than people think, and possibly even more damage than people not bothering at all. So you've got to make sure that where you're putting these things, making sure that you're actually going by what your local recycling place says.
What annoys me, though, I don't know if you find this, but I feel like there needs to be it should be more clear on packaging. Because if something's recyclable, they tend to brag about it on recycling.
Oh, yeah,
it'll be in big letters saying,
widely recycled.
This is recyclable. Yeah. But if it's not, then they just won't put anything. And it's so annoying. Just say not recyclable.
Yes. Or the symbols, because there's one that has like an arrow going around in a circle. And that
the curved arrow, like a circle,
it doesn't mean recycled. Or there's the one with the thing that looks like a bin in a triangle. That's not like recycled either. So it's quite confusing what the different symbols mean.
Yeah. Well, this is. I actually have a friend who researched this for their PhD, and they were telling me, and this is a couple of years ago now, that this is where you really need, for something like recycling, a coordinated national and ideally international system, a regulatory system for this, because at least in the UK, one of the big problems we've got with recycling is that a lot of manufacturers will stick the stamp on their packaging that says widely recycled. Or in other cases, they say this plastic film is not recycled. But actually, the plastic film that's commonly stamped as not recycled is recyclable. But a majority of recycling plants, which have been built according to local legislation and local financial resources, choose not to recycle that stuff because they don't want to invest in the machinery that's required. And on the other end of it, you've got these plastic bottles that nearly always have the stamp saying widely recycled, but actually a lot of local authorities in the UK at least don't have the facilities to recycle those things. I don't know if your documentary confirmed that, but this is what my friend's PhD was about, and they were saying that you've got this double problem of this complete lack of national coordination of the effort, this reliance on local authorities sorting out their own recycling locally and subcontracting to private companies who choose what materials they recycle based on what profit they can make, means that even things that say they're recyclable aren't necessarily recycled in your area.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it was that China was buying up a lot of the recycled plastic, regardless of what grade it was. So they were shipping, for a start, they were shipping off all of this plastic from like the UK and the US or wherever to China, which is mad in itself if you're trying to recycle. And then a lot of it they had there, and they were going, actually, most of this isn't the right plastic or worthy enough grade to be recycled.
Well, yeah. Anyway, depressing. Back to this article.
So
scientists basically broke down this enzyme, and which was based on a leaf compost microorganism, and they introduced mutations into it to increase its ability to break down plastic, the kind of plastic that drink bottles are made from. Mm. And they used this enzyme to break down a ton of plastic, like a literal ton.
Mm. Oh, right. Wow.
1,000 kilos.
Yeah. Plastic bottles that were apparently in 10 hours, it was 90% degraded.
Whoa.
And then the scientists used the material to create new food grade plastic bottles from scratch again.
Fantastic.
So it can be recycled seemingly completely into the same grade quality of plastic, which is a huge major breakthrough, or it could be. And I think it's exciting that this company is partnered with like big people, and they seem to be ambitious. I think as soon as 2024, 2025,
still too far away.
Massive industrial scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds really good.
That's great. That sounds amazing.
Because I think there's people like hate on plastic, and there's good reason to, but I think it's plastic waste that's the problem, not necessarily. Yeah.
Like there's so many useful plastic products. If you look after them, you can use them permanently throughout your entire life and even hand them on to somebody else. It's because people break things and buy new things all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing. Plastic, the whole reason it was manufactured in the first place was because it was so durable and reusable and malleable to so many different things.
Yeah.
It's such a shame that nowadays it's just being used as like disposable film around stuff that doesn't even need to be wrapped. It's mental.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like people have kind of so gone off them that they'll buy 10 canvas bags, which I think I read somewhere, this could have been a myth actually, it could have been disproved, but you would have to use a canvas bag like 1,000 times to make up the energy deficit.
I think it's 150 plastic bag. Times, I think.
150 yeah. times, okay.
But that's the point. Like in a year, you've got 365 days. How often are you going out using a canvas bag? And if you've got 15 of them, how long is it going to take you to get... one,
and but that's the thing. That's just one canvas bag. Generally, people will like the style of another one and then buy another one. And
they're freebies now. People give them away, don't they? It's like corporate.
So if you throw away a canvas bag, you're basically evil. Is that what we're saying here? Right, you're an evil, evil person if you ever throw away a canvas bag.
Exactly. Pass it on to your children and your children's children.
Exactly.
There is one thing about your story, Alex, that we haven't addressed, which is the scary. Does this not sound a lot like the beginnings of a lot of sci-fi stories, where it's like, we created it for good, but it never stopped digesting.
The enzyme.
The enzyme got loose.
Sir. It's mutated again.
Sir, it's digesting the concrete flesh. In the floor.
Yeah.
It's burrowing to the Earth's core. It's destabilizing. Anyway, this is the beginning of the end. Maybe I'm too influenced by what's going on in the world around me. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. This started as like an optimistic story. I wanted to make this optimistic.
It is. We certainly got to a stage in the middle where we're like, plastic, that's depressing. But actually, it's a good story. It's a good story.
It's
well
a great
done, Alex.
Story. My Robinho, weird news this week is... Got? Yeah, it's less optimistic, I'm afraid. It's it's slap bang related to COVID-19. We almost had an episode where we weren't going to talk about it, but I'm afraid we are. But I think I like this story, and I think it's weird because it illustrates just how weird things have got. So there was an interview in the New York Post with a property developer called Joe Farrell, who told them that he had rented out a mansion in the Hamptons on Long Island temporarily for $2 million.
Sorry, to rent it out?
Yep.
How long for?
Until the end of September.
What?
Yeah.
And so how long is that? Wait, April? April, May, June, July. So it's less than 6 months.
Yeah, less than half a year, $2 million. And I'm quoting here, Farrell, the property developer, said, this was a COVID situation, not a normal summer rental.
It makes you wonder how much it costs to rent usually.
Hopefully a lot less.
Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? Mm. But you'd expect it to be like, okay, 5 months in a mansion, say you're having like, I don't know, on the top end, £1,000 a day. You'd be looking at maybe 100 grand, 200 max for like a...
Yeah.
Like that's just two
maybe $10,000 a month would be like the top end you'd hope to pay for something like that. But
Yeah.
But it's...
Genuinely, who can be so rich that it just wouldn't be worth buying? You can buy a mansion in most places for that amount.
Yeah, you could buy. Yeah, you could buy one.
So this was in New York City or New York State or
Long Island. So this is Manhattan.
Okay, yeah, Manhattan. It's expensive, but still.
Yeah, well, apparently it was a textile tycoon who made this $2 million rental, and they were stuck on Manhattan with their family and wanted to leave on a day's notice, so they would pay anything. And this property developer took advantage of that. However, there's a twist to the tale. Long Island is now one of the worst affected areas in New York for COVID-19. But at least... You know, they're going to be comfortable. This mansion has 10 bedrooms, 15 bathrooms, a swimming pool, a hot tub, tennis courts, plural, a walnut library, whatever that is. I don't know what that is.
Is it just made of wood, walnut wood?
Or maybe.
I'm assuming that and not a library full of walnuts.
This is the walnut whip section, yeah. It's got,
and this one is just it's just another walnut. There's very few varieties of walnuts.
We'll be fine until September.
It's also got a bowling alley, a climbing wall, a skate park, a nightclub, a 10-seat movie theater.
You know what? $2 million's pretty good.
Yeah, but for rental, Martin. For rental.
I'm joking.
A
it's
nightclub.
Still insane.
Yeah,
a nightclub parties, for you and all your friends, 2 meters apart.
Yeah. It's great. I hope he's got a large family to take advantage of the nightclub. We're just like, there's just the classic nuclear family of two children and two parents and a dog.
Yeah.
And it's like, where's Jay? Oh, he's in the nightclub by himself again. Yeah. He's DJing and he's dancing.
I'm sorry, but having a nightclub in your house actually sounds a bit depressing, to be honest.
Yeah,
it
well
sounds
depressing.
Like a good feature.
Yeah.
I mean, a bowling alley is one thing, but bowling alleys break down. You've got to know how to deal with that. You've got to have a little bit of engineering, you know, to get under the boards and stuff. You know, those people down at the local bowlplex, the people are always coming over, aren't they? Pulling up the boards, taking the balls out. They're not that reliable.
If you can afford to have a nightclub in your house, you can afford a bowling alley person.
Yeah,
yeah, but they might not be allowed
to come
in.
Over.
Have you seen There Will Be Blood?
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Oh, There Will Be Blood. Yeah, great film.
Yeah, bowling alley at the end there.
Yes.
I'm finished.
Yeah.
I drink your milkshake. Jay, I've told you 1,000 times. We're just here till September.
I went and stayed in a hotel up in the Bulgarian mountains when I was like 11 or 12. And the hotel we stayed in... No, with my family.
Oh.
And the hotel we stayed in was like... We're talking... It was still stuck in like 60s, 70s. Soviet bloc style
nice.
Hotel, so it's proper old school, because it's before the Bulgaria joined the EU.
Yeah.
And this bowling alley was like proper wooden floors. It was mad. I'm just thinking that that a kind of a homemade bowling alley is more like that than your local bowlplex.
Sounds great.
It was good. It was very good. I mean, and there was like a mini little arcade as well. And then we found out that the arcade machines that you'd have to pay like what 15p to play, because you know we're talking about whatever the currency was back then versus the pound, which was strong as well. But it actually accepted 2p pieces too. So I felt, as a kid, I was like, score, like jackpot, I can put in a 2p in here and play this game. But, you know, these people, they're not going to be earning that much, are they? You know, looking back on it, wasn't great. But,
But still, that sounds heavenly. I remember saving up my 2p.
Especially when you
were
told you were going.
Sorry, what were you saying, Alex? Missed that.
I was going to say that story is a little bit more depressing when you were told you were going to Disney World.
Sawville the mountain, but it was bizarre. Looking back on it, it was bizarre because it wasn't. I imagine it's changed quite a lot since then. Because this was, we're talking about the early noughties, like 2001, 2002. I think Bulgaria joined the EU in 2004. Was it one of those countries that joined in 2004?
Yeah.
So I imagine a lot has changed since then.
Yeah,
it's just reminded me.
Yeah, I imagine it was quite a unique experience for you as well, actually.
It was. Mm. I loved it, though.
You were probably one of the last British people to experience that true Bulgarian mountain hotel. Because then it's all been touristified by all the tourists going over.
I would imagine so, yeah. Yeah, true. Anyway, shall I move on to my story?
Yeah, please.
I've learned about a smart toilet that recognises your butt and analyses your poop for diseases.
Can I make a guess, Martin? Is it Japanese?
No.
Oh,
it's German.
No, it's American. It's Stanford University.
Oh, what? Okay. What? Wow.
Yeah. So it can identify you when you sit down on the toilet via your fingerprints, doesn't sound too hygienic, or your anal prints.
Wait, your anal prints? As in, when does your anus make contact with what?
So hang on, I'm just imagining. Let's go back to the fingerprints for a second.
Come on.
I just had the image of like you go up to the toilet and just put your finger on the toilet seat. But I'm guessing that's not what it is.
No.
Because that doesn't seem like very hygienic.
Fingerprint, there's like a machine attached to it when you put your fingerprint on. But the anal recognition comes from a video recorder underneath the toilet.
Oh, come on. A Stanford University project. That was just some pervert student.
I mean, we were talking about the Queen, weren't we? Do you remember the photo? Trying to get a photo last week. It's not too far off, is it? So the idea is that it analyses your urine and your stool samples when you go to the toilet, both via video and then afterwards by the actual stool to see if you're healthy or not.
By video? How is the toilet video doing this?
Well, the video shows the volume and stuff like that. It's one of the bits of data that they use to see if you're healthy.
I imagine someone watching all this on the other end. Weirdo who's just like, oh yeah, oh yeah.
So it uses all sorts of things. It uses a urinalysis strip to measure your urine's white blood cell count and detect levels of proteins, which is pretty much what you do if you have a urine sample at a hospital, right? They dipstick it and test for these things regardless. It also has a built-in identification system, is what we're talking about, on the toilet flush handle. And yes, this is the anus recognition test, which can then give you precise and very individualized results based on your samples. So it can be tailored to you, so you can see how it changes over time to make sure you're remaining healthy.
How does it give you this feedback?
So what they do is they, I believe, it doesn't go into too much detail, but I believe what it does is from the camera, it can detect what your stool sample looks like. I believe that that's one of the things that it does. So it basically takes a sample of it from underneath the toilet seat as well, and then this gets analysed. But the camera collects data from your stool sample and then sends it to a cloud-based system for doctors to then analyze. So they're not coming in and taking your poop. It's being analyzed.
So it's actually being manually analyzed by doctors.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So they send you an email, I guess?
I believe so, or maybe a WhatsApp.
There's an Alexa voice when you stand up off the toilet and flush it. It says, good job, buddy.
Yeah, so it says, I didn't actually see this bit before, but it says that that it processes your feces using an algorithm, which then determines the stool sample's viscosity via the camera. So I imagine that how viscous your poop is an indicator of health.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, diarrhea versus normal poo.
But then you think it would be kind of obvious to be like, okay, well, I've just pebble dashed the back of the toilet.
You're probably not doing too well.
Yeah,
you just have like explosive diarrhea.
Oh my goodness, the results come back negative.
You're not very well. Thanks. What would be the least useful smart device? Because they've made smart like fridges, yeah.
And this is up there,
TVs, obviously. Yeah. But I mean, I guess some of this, like the urinalysis and everything, yeah. I guess there is some yeah. sort of
I
use
think there's
there.
Some benefit to this. Like, there is. You can have that. It's the fuss-free way of having your general checkup, right? Mm-hmm. You combine that with a weight machine a set of scales. You combine that in, you know, in your bathroom. You can have all your health monitoring stuff, and you can send these yeah. remote statistics to doctors or whatever for analysis. And that actually sounds quite useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In terms of what's the most yeah. useless, Alex,
smart toaster.
Yeah, I mean, all of these things that are timed. I mean, even like a timed coffee machine. You know, you can set the timer. Or you can send a device like you just get up and press the button. It takes like a second. It's not that smart. It certainly isn't smart if it breaks down.
Yeah. There is actually like a super expensive like Japanese toaster that costs like $300 or something. And I just would love to see what toast tastes like using that toaster. It must be.
Is the idea that you can access it from your phone and set it to go?
But it needs to have bread in it.
That's how does it get bread into it? Just be stale if you leave it too long.
I mean, it kind of looks like a. It's not like a normal toaster. It's like a George Foreman grill style, but it's interesting.
I think my ideal toaster, and this is a constant problem I have, and I'm sure lots of people at home have this problem too, is it doesn't pop up far enough, particularly when you're doing something like a crumpet. Or, you know, a hot cross bun.
I had a hot cross bun today.
Yeah, you slice it in two, you put it always gets stuck and it's too short to pop up. So even when you know, it's got that extra bit of leverage, even when you're doing that, you still have to resort to using a knife to stick it in there. Well, and that's okay, but there's always that danger factor. But more importantly, there's always that nagging voice from somewhere else and
you're
wherever
be a statistic.
You live. They're just like, you shouldn't stick a knife inside the toaster, you know? And you're like, I can't get it out without the knife. I need to do this.
What you have to do is risk breaking the toaster. But if you fling the handle up really quickly, you can get a bit of momentum and it pins up into the air.
Yeah, a little bit.
You can catch it and burn your fingers to shit. But you've got the thing.
My toaster blew out. This morning.
It fused.
It blew the fuse in
oh,
my
really?
Flat.
It refused to
it
toast.
Just refused. Well, it did. That's the thing. I put the toast down. It went down. And then within 5 seconds, it just popped up. And I thought, wow, that was fast. And then I was like, this isn't toasted. But there was heat coming off it. And I kept putting it down. And it refused to do it. And after a while, I realized it'd blown the whole fuse in the flat.
You're sure there wasn't like three knives stuck in the bottom of it?
I mean,
it sounds like a very smart toaster.
I still am not entirely sure what happened. It's working again now. Once I put the fuse back on, it was fine. But I don't know.
Okay.
It just decided it was going to just like, nope, this toast is too much for me. So
artificial intelligence has taken over your toaster.
Yeah, I've got a smart toaster. And it went on strike momentarily this morning. Yeah.
It's going to find a way to connect to the internet, download all the information, and find a way to wipe out the human race. And it's all because of your toaster, Robert.
I mean, if 2020 can get any weirder, right? It's like
the
toasters have attacked. Okay, shall we move on to our big question of the week?
Let's. Ooh,
so, I thought that we'd discuss UFOs and specifically the decline in UFO sightings over the recent number of years. I mean, I think there was a peak in about 2014, I believe. But since then, sightings have gradually been declining. So, why is this the case? Have all the aliens gone home, or is there something else that we're missing? What do you guys think?
It's a weird one, isn't it?
Since
2014, there's been a massive drop in cases that have been reported. I'm looking at an article at the moment. In 2014, there were 8,670 reported for the National UFO Reporting Center. Mm. And now, and then in 2018, there was just 1,300.
That's a huge drop.
What's happening? What's going on?
It's worth noting also that the vast majority of sightings are in the USA.
Yes.
Like,
no, you're right. Yeah, they
huge,
are.
Huge, like 90% or so. Probably a bit less than that, but of sightings are in the USA. So that's just worth noting. Because that might affect any possible explanations for why there has been a decline. Because any decline in UFO sightings must involve significantly a shift in America.
Yes, this is true. You'd think so. I mean, should we go through what the kind of the major issues are in terms of why this might be the case? I mean, one that definitely springs to mind for me is the fact that technology has been getting so much better.
Yeah.
So the sightings that we have now, if people are going to make claims about it, they've got to be damn well sure that they have evidence, because everyone has a camera on them. Everyone has a phone on their camera.
Right, yeah.
You're not going to get some grainy piece of crap. You're going to get something that's quite good, hopefully, if you were to take a picture. So maybe it's not that the UFO sightings have decreased massively. It's just that the legitimate ones that weren't people hoaxing or just saying what they were saying, that they've seen something and they're not being able to back it up. So almost those hoax ones or the illegitimate ones have declined, whereas the real alien sightings have remained consistent over time, perhaps.
I would say, does that not have a double-edged sword in that, as you say, technology has increased, so surely it would be more difficult to detect some hoax videos if they have really good CGI or that kind of thing.
I see what you mean. Yeah, as in like, but then that's a lot of effort and knowledge, isn't it, to be able to do that?
That's true. But then, you know, we've got like, we're in the world of deep fakes and stuff now.
So
and
that's true. That's a good point, yeah.
I'm surprised that, because I remember I used to go down the YouTube rabbit holes of looking at UFO videos, and some of them, even back then, were good enough to be a bit convincing.
Yeah.
And sure. But then you look at them now and there's just terrible CGI. But I haven't seen any of those for a while either. Weird.
But there was also, just a few months ago, was it towards the end of 2019, there was that US Air Force officer, like a significant one, was he a colonel, who said something about UFO sightings should be taken seriously because a lot of them are actually experimental aircraft from foreign nations or from the USA itself, top secret projects. Aircraft that fly in peculiar ways, that look strange because of their design, that people are seeing, particularly seeing them at night or in twilight, so your eye is not entirely sure what you're seeing. And he made the news because he said something along the lines of, you know, the USA has fallen behind in developing new aircraft. Well, he was saying simultaneously that we should take UFO sightings seriously, not because they might not necessarily be aliens, but because they could well be foreign nations, foreign to the USA, experimental aircraft, and therefore they should be taken seriously. But the flip side, he was also implying that because America has put less effort into developing new aircraft, he was implying that UFO sightings have decreased because the USA's military is reducing the opportunities for people to see unidentified flying objects.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in a kind of additional point to that is air traffic in general has got so much greater in recent years. I mean, not at the moment with what's going on, but in general it is. Yeah. So are people just less, I don't know, do people notice what's going on in the skies less? Are people less interested because they just think, oh, it's a plane?
Or they've gotten used to all the planes.
A drone, or it could be, I don't know, a number of different things as opposed to...
Especially across rural America, where a lot of these sightings presumably took place or would usually take place.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be less flight paths there originally, but now with increased air travel, there are far more flights going over on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's a good point.
People might just be getting used to seeing things in the sky and just assume it's something. Going back to what you said, Robin, about the military, and it could be you know, military objects in the sky. Apparently the head of the National UFO Reporting Center, Peter Davenport, suggested that some of like people's reports of UFO sightings might be intercepted by the government for that very reason of, yes, they should be taken seriously because they might be a foreign government's technology in the sky, but also the US government won't want any of their secret projects to be spoken about.
Okay, so they're being seen but not reported.
Yeah, so the theory is, I guess, that the government are making a note of what sightings are being reported,
yeah,
and then making sure the ones that maybe they want to keep on the down low don't see the light of day.
Oh, that's interesting.
For whatever reason.
Because, yeah, of course, we're getting our data in terms of numbers of UFO sightings. Like Martin cited, what was it, 8,000 sightings in 2014? Mm-hmm. And yeah, now it's about 5,500 in 2019. That, yeah, comes from places like the National UFO Reporting Center, which is essentially, yeah, a fan club, one, isn't it? It's a, mm, it's a hobby. It's an enthusiasts doing this, people who are interested. And they're, what they're doing is they're looking at media reports for UFO sightings and any kind of reports to police. But yeah, if the government's intercepting those and preventing the media from reporting on things and, you know, hushing up reports to the police, then without a government-funded national body or a project like, mm, Project Blue Book, where there's officials, mm-hmm, working for the military looking into and investigating UFO sightings, there's no comprehensive, not even necessarily reliable collection of the data, is there?
But that's, I mean, I guess if you were the government and you were trying to find like where a central focus where all these reports would go to, you would look at something like the National UFO Reporting Center or MUFON or something,
yeah,
and start from there, I assume. That's where people, I guess, are likely to like make a report, or they would just post it online nowadays. But what I like about that theory is that it has historical precedent, right? With, mm, Project Blue Book. Mm. And then, of course, you've got the Mirage Men, the real Men in Black. And their technique back in the day was to go to people who had seen and reported a UFO sighting,
yeah,
which was like a US government aircraft.
Yeah.
And then they would convince them that they'd actually seen an alien and not to talk about it, so that they seemed crazy to everyone else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of discredited their, you know, their stories. And it was fine, for the US government, it was fine if someone thought that they'd seen an alien, as long as they didn't think that they'd seen a secret military aircraft.
Yeah.
Well, that was it. They made sure that people said that they were seeing aliens instead, didn't they?
It's despicable.
So that, I mean,
it really is. Hush, hush.
So it seems like, you know, they have a history of doing this kind of thing. So, I mean,
yeah,
maybe that's one reason why these sightings have fallen. Maybe after 2014, yeah, they started a new, mm-hmm, project.
I mean, could we be overlooking a social factor here? The fact that... Mm.
We could very well be overlooking a social factor.
If you look at when a lot of the main UFO sightings were, especially after Roswell in 1947?
1947, yeah, July.
Yeah, July. The age of those people that were going to be enthusiasts after that kind of time would probably be in their 20s and 30s. You're looking at those that generation of people who are massively into UFOs in the 50s and 60s, getting pretty old now. Maybe they just don't want to go out and look at the stars all night and looking for UFOs and reporting what they see in the sky, where they could just be inside having a nice warm tomato soup.
Tomato soup. Yeah, that's
and a very good point. A crusty cob.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I guess, yeah, like maybe it's even broader than that. Maybe people are looking online as opposed to at the skies for aliens now. Maybe they, because there's so many things online, UFO sightings.
Yes.
Maybe people's attention spans aren't as good as they once were.
People, yeah, are looking and they just down see at their smartphones, they're not looking up at the sky.
Well, that's a good point, yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, why would you want to go out and look at yourself when you can see it on the internet?
Exactly.
Why play football when you can watch a match on TV? Maybe it's a similar kind of thing.
I mean, it's also thinking about the night sky in particular. There's also thinking about the way that urban settlements have grown and light pollution has grown.
Mm. Since, and noise pollution too, I guess.
Noise pollution too, yeah, since 1947. And so many early UFO sightings depend on people observing lights in the, mm-hmm, night sky and hearing a strange sound which makes them turn their head. So maybe all that pollution, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I live in a relatively small town and I look up at the night sky a lot of the time. I just see the orange glow of the city.
Mm.
Nearby.
You're lucky to see stars, aren't you, really?
Yeah, exactly. So seeing anything else. And even if you can see the stars, going back to what Martin was saying about it's a generational thing, there are over 2,200 satellites orbiting Earth now. So who's to say, along with the number of flights that go overhead at night, people are looking at the sky and they're seeing a UFO, and I mean that in the purest sense of the term, an unidentified flying object, and they're looking at it and thinking, ah, it's probably a satellite. Or it's probably a plane. Or like Martin said earlier, it's probably a drone.
And you can convince yourself that it's something else that you know, can't you?
Yeah, very easily. Mm. Yeah, we're in the information age. There's so much more capacity for people to think rationally and to perhaps convince themselves that they're thinking rationally when actually they might be missing something.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, there's also, I guess, an argument to be made that maybe UFO sightings haven't decreased, but the traditional means of reporting them has. Ooh. So, like, I mean, now people might just take a video and post it on Facebook instead of reporting it to the National UFO Reporting Center.
That's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the same with crime. Crime nowadays, people don't phone up the police station, they tweet them.
Yeah. They just shame the criminal.
Exactly, yeah.
That's a very good point, actually. The reporting methods have changed because people aren't reporting, necessarily. They're just sharing the information, but in a very, very indirect way.
Indirect, but equally, if not more, so effective, right? You're going to get more viewers, you're going to get more feedback if you post it on Twitter, Instagram, or a website, I don't know. It kind of makes more sense, doesn't it, if you're an enthusiast to share it with other enthusiasts as opposed to the National UFO Reporting Center, where it just becomes another statistic as opposed to a story.
That is true.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So are you suggesting then the motivation has changed for people who are reporting UFOs?
Yeah, well, they want attention instead of the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that wouldn't be the case with everyone, but maybe they just want to get the word out there. Maybe they get instant feedback when they post it online. Hmm. You know, they want to find out what other people think of this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get that immediacy, don't you? You get that dopamine hit of the likes and shares.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe, just maybe, aliens have just... they're just fed up of coming to Earth. They've seen the state of it right now. They're like, there's no way I'm catching this COVID.
Yes.
Like, Krakatoa has just gone off. Nah, I'm all right, thanks.
Nah. They've seen 2020, and they're not having any of it.
Given that we've gone from pretty much zero UFO sightings before the Second World War to, now 5,500 a year, maybe the aliens have come, done their stuff, and they're just kind of... slowly
they're done now.
They're still making a few trips, but it's a bit of a tourist spot now. There's just a few alien families going for a quick visit, like, oh, look at the humans.
A bit like those crazy people that still go to Chernobyl. It's like, yeah, you can go there if you want to, it's a bit dangerous, you may well die, but Chernobyl, it's interesting. Case study.
Maybe that's it. We're just a case study. A-level geography for aliens. They just come by.
I love the idea of that. And there's Earth, and everyone's like, ooh, it looks horrible. It's like, yeah, it is. We won't bother with that. Next on the trip, Mars. Hooray!
I think that is actually one of my favourite theories, that we're in an alien zoo.
Because
it's one of the neatest explanations for the Fermi paradox, I think, that aliens know that we're here, and they just, we're just... the equivalent of behind a glass panel. And there's a bunch of alien kids putting their face up against the glass watching us.
Well, a lot of the most prominent UFO or ufologists, people who investigate and study UFOs, a lot of them do seem to be leaning towards saying, if they had really visited us and wanted to do something meaningful, we would know. If they wanted to live amongst us, if they wanted to conduct real experiments, if they wanted to have some kind of impact on our life, whether they wanted to conquer us or change our lives for the better, we would absolutely know. They would have done something, they would have interfered in such a way that we couldn't avoid knowing about it. And this is ufologists saying this. So the alien zoo, where they're just kind of standing back and watching, makes a lot more sense.
Yes.
But there's one. There is one thing that I guess we touched upon, but didn't really state, just as a possibility. I want to try to cover all possible explanations here. Is it possible that UFO sightings have gone down because, as you both pointed out, reporting methods have possibly changed? But is it that reporting methods have changed through not just technology changing and, of course, social media becoming a thing, but because the authorities are no longer the people that people who see UFOs want to be telling about UFOs?
So, like, no one trusts these reporting methods.
Exactly.
There's skepticism of any kind of authoritative body, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Given what Alex described them doing in the past to people who'd seen UFOs, and given that with things like Project Blue Book, which is now out in the open, you can go onto the government, the US government website and actually look at the files. And so we know that they did these massive investigations and did nothing with it. You know, people just have no reason to believe that reporting them to any kind of authority, whether it's a local authority like the police or a bigger authority like the military, is actually worthwhile. You know, maybe there are people in their back gardens, they see a UFO and they're just like, shrug.
Yes.
I mean, I guess there's no better example of that distrust of what's going on in the government relating to aliens, and also proof that interest is still there for this topic, than Storm Area 51.
Exactly. People, that's very true.
Yeah.
People are clearly interested in it, but yeah, have absolutely no trust in the government.
Storm Area 51 might be a great case study, because of course that kind of might encapsulate everything we've just said, in the sense that it was a viral event before it happened. And how many people said they'd go?
Yeah.
A couple
of million people said they'd go, and in the end, what, 5,000 to 10,000 people turned up.
Well, that's it, isn't it? And that's probably the same with the number of people who watch and engage with UFO conspiracy content online, and those who go out and look at the skies and then record and then happen to capture something and then send it into the National UFO Reporting Center. You know, there's that discrepancy for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, who's up for a quiz?
Oh, yes.
Sounds good. I'm going to beat Robin this time. Okay. This is it.
Okay.
This is the one. I'm sure of it.
As you guys are very, very much aware, this quiz was done in a short space of time when I realised that I was quizmaster about 20 minutes before we were recording this. So it is quite personal to me, okay?
Oh, no.
It's quite personal.
Oh, no.
Terrible.
So it's
I'm looking up some rugby facts.
you might want to look up some rugby facts. There's four rounds. Three of the rounds are split into three questions each. That makes up nine. And then there's question 10 is just a personal question about myself.
Oh, damn it.
Okay, let me hear your buzzers. Alex?
So you mentioned the show earlier, so I thought I'd have a clip from it. From Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Oh, nice.
You and he were buddies, weren't you?
My favourite line. Okay, we're sticking with an old favourite for me.
Nice.
Yep. Got it.
It's a classic.
It's a classic.
It's faithful, true and faithful. Yeah. I like it.
You can't go wrong with a Wilhelm scream.
No, true. Okay, guys. So three rounds of three questions, and then an extra question, and then a bonus question if you're tied.
Okay.
Round one is beer.
Oh, for God's sake! This is.
Okay. Question one. Multiple choice.
Okay.
In what modern-day country was the process of making beer first established? Was it A, Iraq, B, Turkey, or C, Germany?
You and he were buddies, weren't...
That was Alex.
Iraq.
Iraq is correct.
Yes!
Well done.
What a leap in the dark.
Very good. A leap in the dark, Iraq.
I thought Germany was going to be a red herring.
Too obvious. Too obvious.
Yeah. Germany was it wasn't really a red herring because it's quite a modern, fairly modern country, but in terms of beer making. Question number two. What is the most popular beer in the USA?
You and he were buddies, weren't...
That was Alex.
That was Alex, yeah.
Budweiser?
No.
Oh, damn. Is it Corona?
No.
Damn it. Okay.
Yes. Is it Bud Light?
It's Bud Light.
Oh, come on. Oh, no.
It was. I sensed it in the tone of which you said no
of the,
to
of
me.
The rejection.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. I should have picked up on that. Yeah.
Oh, very good. 2-0. Ooh, he's had a good start here. Okay, question number 3. What makes a porter / stout style beer dark?
You and he were buddies, weren't you?
Is it the length of time that the hops ferment for?
No.
Okay. Thought I'd throw a guess out there. I'm not going to get any points in the other rounds.
Enough. Yes, Robin.
I'm screwing up my face right now. You can't see this because I'm deep in thought, trying to think of the right answer. Is it to do with how, for lack of a better word, burnt the hops are before you start to ferment them?
No. Darn. I'll give you a clue. I'll give you both a clue.
Okay.
It's not to do with the hops. It's to do with one of the other ingredients.
You and he were buddies, weren't you?
Was that me?
Yeah, it was.
Yes, that was your
Alex. Buzz, so.
Oh, okay. Do they add something sugary into it?
I mean, technically, yes, but that's not the answer I was looking for.
It's not the answer.
No, because you can have light beers where they add things that are sugary into them.
The type of yeast?
No, it's one of the other. It's only four main ingredients. It's one of the other ingredients.
Oh my gosh.
Do you want me to tell you?
No.
Do you want to have one more?
Can we have another clue?
Yeah.
It's not to do with the water. It's to do with the other ingredients.
Well, that's really not helpful.
It's to do with that fourth ingredient. Mm. You've got your hops, you've got your yeast, you've got your water.
Water. I don't know what. It's like sugar, isn't it? Is it sugar?
No.
It is sugar, but it's a particular type of. Where do they get the sugar from?
You and he were buddies, weren't you?
Yes, Alex.
Do they use dark sugar? Demerara?
No. I mean, you can do, and I guess that would do that, but it's not the answer.
What, did you just give him the point?
No.
Oh, okay. So sugar comes from canes or beets. Is it because they use beet sugar?
No, so it's the other thing used in to create beer is malt. So it will be using dark malt. So usually barley malt they use, and it will be dark versions of that. So the beer that I'm drinking at the moment has, which is a porter, stout style, has pale chocolate malt, brown malt, and cacao nibs. Those kind of things will make it dark.
Cacao, nice.
Yeah, that's just an added thing. But the two malts there are what will make a beer dark. And so basically using dark and roasted malts. Okay, so that's 2-0 still to to Alex. Going on to round 2.
I think Alex has got this quiz.
No, not yet. Round. Not yet.
Oh,
not,
you totally have. You totally have.
I'm not claiming victory yet.
No, you don't claim victory yet because round 2 is on rugby.
It's on what? Sorry, it cut out.
Rugby.
Oh, for God's
rugby.
Sake.
Rugby, oh man.
Why?
I'm not going to get any of these.
You might be able to get this, Alex. So, you know, don't panic yet.
I genuinely know absolutely nothing about rugby.
Well, we're on an even par.
Okay. Question number 4. How many players are on a rugby field?
Buddies, weren't you?
What was that, Alex?
10.
I didn't finish the question. 10.
Could you finish the question, Martin?
How many players are on a rugby field at one time, including the referee?
Which rugby are we talking about?
Rugby union, of course.
Including the referee?
Mm-hmm.
31.
31 is correct.
Yeah.
15 aside, plus the ref.
Yeah.
There we
Fair.
Go.
Fair enough.
Question number 5. 2-1.
I'm just getting through this round because this one's obviously not going to be successful for me. There's nothing I can do with this round.
There is.
You can guess. Okay, question number 5. Which country won the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
You and he were buddies, weren't you?
What? Yes, Alex.
New Zealand.
No.
Oh.
Oh, no. I thought it was New Zealand too. They were in the final though, right? Weren't they?
No, they weren't.
Shit. Who was in the final? It was only last year.
Have another guess, Alex. See
can I have another guess?
Yeah, you've both had a guess. Oh no, actually, no, Robin hasn't had a guess.
Okay, I'll let Robin have a guess.
But I feel terrible now. Australia.
No. Narrows it down.
Does narrow it down. Oh, of course it does.
Is it... Oh, hang on. Wait. I didn't buzz.
You didn't buzz.
Oh, okay. Well, I buzzed.
Go
waiting.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Martin, judgment call. I think,
Alex, you get a go now because you were about to answer your second one before Robin had his guess, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
So go for it.
South Africa.
It is South Africa.
Yeah. You know what?
Well done.
You know what's really stupid? I watched that game.
It was England. The final was England, South Africa.
Oh, I can't believe it. Oh. Can't believe it.
3-1. Question
also,
number six.
I'm going to omit this now just to make this humiliation and Alex's imminent victory even more victorious. The malt question I should have got, not only because I know the basics about beer and whiskey, but I also went on a brewery tour last year. So, you know, basically this whole lockdown thing has just completely messed with my head.
Just to rub salt in the wound, I'm also allergic to most beer, so I don't.
That's true, actually, yeah. Yeah, and that would be
true,
it. Because hops will be fine for you. There's nothing gluten-y about hops.
Oh, dear. Okay. So
3-1, question six.
Yeah.
This is closest wins.
Oh, no.
What year was rugby officially invented?
Ooh.
What year was rugby officially invented?
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, see, I feel like there's going to be... I don't want to... I think... I'm not even going to say anything.
After you, Alex. I'm not going to guess until you do. I'm putting down my phone, not pressing the buzzer.
You buddies, weren't you?
What year was rugby officially invented? What, rugby union or the actual game, the whole game?
It shouldn't matter, actually, because it was just rugby at first.
Oh, okay. 1950. Now, that's very late, probably, you're going to say. That's a ridiculous guess.
I'm going to say...
I mean, do you want to revise that, Alex?
No, because I think it's going to be later than we think.
Yeah, so 18... He might be closest wins, I suppose, yeah. 1880, I'm going to say.
It was... So William Webb Ellis, a rugby school, picked up that ball and ran with it in 1823.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow, that was so totally wrong. I thought it would be game of rugger existed for hundreds of years, but it was only put on paper in 1961 or something.
That kind of thing, yeah.
I mean, people talk about William Webb Ellis, the William Webb Ellis trophy is the World Cup trophy, because that's when the rugby school that rugby's named after, he picked up the ball and ran with it.
Yeah.
Whereas, of course, people will be running around with some sort of ball or an object and people tackling them to the ground for it for thousands of years, most likely. So that's why I said officially, but yeah, 1823.
Fair
official.
Enough.
So that's 3-2.
Than I expected.
Three, two, Alex, is that?
Alex definitely has more.
So round three. Any guesses what this one could be?
You got beer, rugby, games, maybe?
It's not games. I haven't got games. I've got round three is drumming.
Oh, dear.
That's the other thing I love to do.
Yeah, this is going to be the most educational quiz I've done for a while.
Hopefully. Okay, so this one again is multiple choice.
Okay.
Question seven.
All right. Okay.
Which of these is not a cymbal manufacturer? Is it A, Sabian, B, Rickenbacker, or C, Pasty?
What was that last one?
Buddies, weren't you?
The second option. Rickenbacker, or whatever it's
Rickenbacker.
Called. Yes.
Okay. What was...
Rickenbacker. Sorry, Robin.
So what was C?
Pasty.
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 Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So Alex, you went for B, Rickenbacker.
Yes.
Rickenbacker is correct.
Yes.
Rickenbacker, I believe they make guitars.
They just didn't sound very cymbal-y to me.
No, yeah, guitar-y as opposed to cymbal-y. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So that's 4-2. Question number eight.
Oh, he's got it.
Who was the drummer of The Who until his death in 1978?
Oh, really? I'm not going to get this, I don't think. He was very famous, though, wasn't he? Wasn't he like a really good drummer?
He was fairly good, yes.
There are lots of like famous drummers who died. Like the Rolling Stones. Was it the Rolling Stones drummer who died as well? Oh, I don't know.
Maybe initials.
Okay, do you want initials? KM.
KM.
Alex just got there first.
I don't know it, but Robin seemed on the cusp.
Robin.
Is it Kevin Moss?
No.
Oh.
Robin, any ideas?
Keith Moon.
Oh, yeah, Keith Moon.
Keith Moon it is.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, because he's the only K drummer I've heard of.
What other name is there? Kevin. Kevin, I guess.
There's no famous Kevins, is there?
Nah, not really. Yeah. Kevin Peterson, I guess. But...
Who's Kevin Peterson?
He's a cricketer.
Oh, okay.
Kevin from Home Alone, Kevin McAllister.
Kevin Spacey, I guess.
Not real.
But... Kevin Spacey.
He's not real. Oh, Kevin Spacey.
He's not real, but his name is Kevin. 4-3, is that? 4-3, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Question number 9. Name two different types of drums on a standard drum kit.
You'd he were buddies, weren't you?
I think Alex just got there first.
Yep.
A snare.
Yes.
And a big boy. no, hang on. No, I'm joking. That was a joke. A snare and a...
five.
A...
four.
A beat drum.
Three. Two.
Okay, a beat drum? No?
One. No. Okay, no, that's not right.
Is it worth me guessing?
Yeah, have a guess.
Do I have to name two different types of one now?
Two. Well, you can use one of the ones. Because
I could say snare drum and bass drum.
And that would be correct. Well done. You have the point.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the risk, I guess, that I took with buzzing.
Yeah.
I probably should have said
yes after you said snare, to be fair. But anyway.
That was a bit of a giveaway. Although I knew snare. Yeah.
Oh, then it doesn't matter. That's fine.
For all.
Thank you, Alex. Yeah.
For all, question number 10.
I hate this.
It's the decider. Okay, so this round is just a personal fact about me that you might know, you might not know. Okay.
I'm sorry if I don't know it, Martin.
But yeah, it's okay. Let's see. Question 10. What is my middle name?
He were buddies, weren't you?
Alex.
It just came to mind. Is it Peter?
It is.
Yeah.
Well done.
You've won the quiz.
I don't know why I know that. Is it on something? Yeah. Like your?
Probably on my Facebook. I believe I never go on Facebook, but I believe.
Bonus question.
You know.
Yes.
What is your national insurance?
Hang on. Wait a second. I've waited. I've waited how long for this?
A while.
Two in a row.
Two in a row. A while. But I've taken down Robin,
it had to happen.
I just want to thank my family.
Well done, sir.
Shout out to some of the people that messaged me this week congratulating me on last week's victory. You really helped me with this week. Keep morale up. And thank you, Martin, for the quiz.
Yes,
no problem. Martin. I mean, you said you were going to lose from the start. So.
And last but not least, thank you, Robin, for... for graciously losing to me this week.
No, well done, sir. I'm going to shake your hand, but virtually,
Okay,
across the internet, shaking your hand. Yeah,
I think getting a question right on the rugby round really served you well.
Yeah,
Managing to get through that without it being 3-0.
Also, two of the multiple choice ones I just guessed instantly as soon as the options came up. And fortunately, they served me well.
The buzzer game was strong. It was also very strong.
It was.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Oh, nice. Cool. Oh, thank you for that, Martin.
Well done, Alex. Very good win. Congratulations.
That was a great win. That was well done. Before we started recording this podcast, I did say to Alex, we're now in the Rise of Alex era.
I think
this is going to be it for a while now. Alex is going to be king. Claw
his
way
to the top. He's a confidence quizzer for sure.
Yeah.
Gets on a roll and there's no stopping him.
That's true. Although next week I'm doing the quiz, so I don't know, that might break up my flow, you know.
It could do. You could lose a bit of momentum.
And the best way to stop you winning is for you to not play. So, you know.
Exactly. I'm never going to do another quiz. I'm just going to call it a day. No, I think I'm still dead last on the scoreboard, so I need to win a few more.
A couple more, I reckon, and then you're way back in the race, definitely.
Because you were 14% last week, and Martin's on 38, something like that. So
okay, it's going to be close then, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, you can do it. You can do it.
You've got that first black mark against your record, your 100% score, Robin.
It's only downhill from here. It's only downhill.
Well, thank you guys. Thank you so much for joining me this week, and thank you everyone at home for joining as well. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's been fun. Yeah, thanks for hosting, Martin. Yeah. It's been wonderful. And
no problem. We're going to head on over to our Patreon, aren't we, and discuss another fantastic topic. So for everyone that's signed up to see that, then you can. And I guess we'll see you next time on this quarantini special version of the Just Interesting podcast.
Yeah.
Right.
Bye for
see
now.
See you later, guys.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.